What's up, late night radio fans? Welcome to Transition State on CITR 101.9 Campus Radio FM. I'm your host, as always, Adam Smiley. This week we'll be reading from the Compendium of Therapeutics for Minor Ailments and talking other pharmaceutical errata. But first, let's hear some music.
When you wake up in the morning, wonder where it's gone. Look around yourself, who is all wrong? Hear a noise inside your head, can't fall asleep, go to bed. You know where to go.
Get on the road. The media should strive to hold corporations, government, and institutions accountable to the Canadian public. Today, what is most shocking is what Canadians are not being told, what journalists cannot report on, and how opportunities for citizens to speak out are being routinely shut down. Whether it be muzzled scientists, policing of protest, digital surveillance, or disrespect for the democratic process, the threat to free debate and political participation is clear. This November 7th to 8th, Media Democracy Days 2014 will tackle these threats head-on with a series of workshops and panels featuring
keynote speakers Michael Geist, copyright expert and specialist on internet freedom, Riley Yeo, community engagement specialist at openmedia.ca, Kai Nagata, energy and democracy director at Dogwood Initiative.
Look online at 2014.mediademocracydays.ca for registration and information about our events. Brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM.
Mm-hmm. Love that mandolin. That was Lizzie Hoyt with New Lady on the Prairie. Before that was Olekranon with Perry View. And before that, we heard from T. Nile, When You Wake Up. Now down to business. The business of acute cough. Cough is a common symptom of many respiratory diseases and is a normal physiological response aimed at protecting the respiratory tract. It is a voluntarily induced or involuntarily activated reflex arc that can be triggered by a wide range of chemical and mechanical stimuli. First, receptors in the head, neck, and chest are stimulated. This information is then transmitted to the cough center in the medulla via the afferent limb of the vagus nerve, resulting in increased neural activity in the efferent pathway to both the respiratory musculature and airway. Cough is present in many respiratory diseases. To help guide clinical determination, it can be useful to classify according to duration within the following three categories: acute, lasting less than 3 weeks, subacute, lasting 3 to 8 weeks, and chronic, lasting more than 8 weeks, also known as the chron-chron. Viral infections of the upper respiratory tract are the most common cause of acute cough and can lead to a post-infectious cough. Cough due to viral infections appears to arise from stimulation of the cough reflex in the upper respiratory tract by post-nasal drip, referred to as upper airway cough syndrome, formerly post-nasal drip syndrome. Clearing of the throat or both. Other frequent causes include acute bacterial sinusitis, exacerbation of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, allergic rhinitis, and rhinitis due to environmental irritants, Bordetella pertussis or B. parapertussis infection may be suspected in those with persistent cough. Non-pharmacologic therapy. Two lines. Although evidence is lacking, hydration with oral liquids and humidified air may be beneficial. Pharmacologic therapy. Here we go. Specific treatments can be applied if treatment of the underlying problem can resolve the cough. For example, in gastroesophageal reflux disease, treatment of the reflux itself is indicated. Smokers presenting with cough are prime candidates for discussing smoking cessation strategies. A specific treatment is not always possible. For the common cold, for example, there is no cure for the viral infection. Non-specific treatments, such as non-prescription antitussives and protussives, expectorants, are used in these cases depending on the presence, absence of mucus, which is called sputum, production. The efficacy of drugs used in the treatment of cough has been evaluated in numerous studies, including many systematic reviews. They generally show a lack of good evidence for the effectiveness of any non-prescription product at reducing the frequency or severity of cough in children or adults. Some studies have shown benefit. However, the positive results in these studies were often of questionable clinical relevance. Overall, there is little evidence for or against the effectiveness of non-prescription cough medicines. Non-prescription agents used in the management of cough are described in Table 2. Antihistamines. First-generation antihistamines may have a small effect on cough caused by upper respiratory tract infections. Their anticholinergic properties may reduce postnasal drip, one of the mechanisms responsible for cough in the common cold. The effect is modest and the side effects may outweigh the benefits. The second-generation antihistamines lack significant anticholinergic effects and therefore are not effective for this indication. Antitussives. The available non-prescription antitussives act centrally to suppress cough. The exact mechanism is unknown. However, the brainstem is thought to be the main region where antitussive agents act to inhibit motor control of cough. Dextromethorphan and codeine are commonly used to treat cough related to upper respiratory tract infections, although there is little evidence for efficacy. Some studies have shown that they are no more effective than placebo, while others demonstrated a modest benefit. The reason for this discrepancy may be related to the limited efficacy of dextromethorphan to inhibit cough, requiring larger numbers of subjects to demonstrate a significant effect. Subsequently, the American College of Chest Physicians, the ACCP, 2006 guideline on the management of cough does not recommend centrally acting cough suppressants for cough secondary to upper respiratory tract infections. On the other hand, codeine and dextromethorphan are effective for cough due to COPD, suppressing cough counts by 40 to 60% and may be used for short-term relief. Antitussives are not recommended when cough performs a useful function. If used by a patient with productive cough, more mucus is retained. The protussive agents act peripherally. Guaifenesin is intended to enhance cough effectiveness by promoting the clearance of airway secretions. Expectorants are reported to reduce sputum viscosity, permitting more effective removal of secretions from the respiratory tract. Again, there is a lack of evidence to support efficacy. They do not thin sputum or increase sputum volume, even at doses higher than recommended. Good hydration with oral liquids and humidified air is perhaps the best expectorant that can be recommended. Other agents. Limited evidence suggests honey may be an effective cough suppressant in children. A Cochrane review concluded that honey, administered before sleep, may be moderately better than no treatment, or diphenhydramine, which is a first-generation antihistamine, and no different from dextromethorphan, for reducing cough severity and improving sleep quality. Honey has demulcent, antioxidant, and antibacterial effects. It is proposed that the demulcent effect may act to decrease cough. Because of the risk of botulism, honey should be pasteurized and only given to immunocompetent children over the age of 1 year. Zinc lozenges have been used to alleviate cough due to the common cold. Studies evaluating the efficacy of zinc in common cold symptoms have yielded conflicting results, and two meta-analyses have concluded there is insufficient evidence to recommend zinc preparations. Therefore, the ACCP guidelines do not recommend zinc preparations for acute cough due to the common cold. In addition, zinc can be associated with unpleasant taste, mouth irritation, and nausea. Anesthetics such as benzocaine, phenol, or menthol may reduce the sensitivity of peripheral nociceptors. They have been used as antitussives, but evidence for efficacy is poor. Prescription therapy. Bronchodilators, salbutamol, formoterol, are recommended only for cough due to obstructive lung disease, for example, asthma or COPD. Cough in special populations. Children. In December 2008, Health Canada issued an advisory requiring manufacturers to relabel non-prescription cough and cold medicines with certain active ingredients to indicate that they should not be used in children under 6 years. Dextromethorphan, guaifenesin, and first-generation antihistamines in cough and cold products are included in the list of active ingredients in the Health Canada advisory. Although cough and cold medicines have been used by children for many years, little evidence supports their effectiveness in this population. In addition, reports of misuse, overdose, and very rare serious side effects have raised concerns about the use of these medicines in children under 6. Rare but serious potential side effects include convulsions, increased heart rate, decreased level of consciousness, abnormal heart rhythms, and hallucinations. In children 6 to 12 years old, dextromethorphan or codeine can be used to treat non-productive cough, though evidence of efficacy in children is absent. Caution is advised as children are more sensitive to the adverse effects of codeine.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, nourishing radio.
Mm. So watery, and yet there's a smack of ham to it.
You already know I didn't ask for this, and it's easy to pretend that there's nothing amiss, and I'm not really sure if it's like what it seems, because nothing makes sense when it happens to me. It seems pretty normal, but I don't know when the road seems inside a thing called letting go. Who the fuck am I kidding? I'll never stop whining. Why am I surprised? This is bad fucking timing. I've been spending a while getting good at this stuff, because it's way too easy to get caught up in too good for this shit. That's not working and I can't get over it. Defense mechanism is real fucking draining. I can't keep up with all these constant complaining. You already know I didn't ask for this shit. It's easy to pretend that there's nothing amiss yet. I'm not really sure if it's like what it seems, because nothing makes sense when it happens to me. Seems pretty normal, but I don't know when the road sees a side of it, oh, let it go. Who the fuck am I kidding? I'll never stop whining. Why am I surprised? To anyone but me, but I think if it makes sense to you eventually. I'm always acting like I'm too good for this stuff. That's all bullshit, and I think I've had enough. I guess I can't admit that I'm not fucking special. Bring myself over to a normal person's level.
That was the Victoria punk band Open Relationship. Two songs. We heard Poochie and Nice Dick. Before that, we heard from Coronado, A Line We Never Drew. And before that, The Deep Musings of Kenna Burima. Come to Me in Cold Dark Slumber was the title. Now, back to the matter at hand. Nausea and vomiting. Nausea is the unpleasant sensation of the imminent need to vomit and may or may not lead to vomiting. Vomiting is the forceful expulsion of gastric contents with contraction of the abdominal and chest wall musculature. Retching, or dry heaves, is the same physiologic process as vomiting, but without expulsion of gastric contents due to lack of, or less coordinated, or less marked reverses, or less marked reverse peristalsis against a closed glottis. Nausea and vomiting can be associated with disorders of the gastrointestinal, endocrine, or central nervous systems, or may be due to infections, medications, toxins, or aberrant metabolic processes. Some causes of nausea and vomiting are listed in Table 1. This chapter addresses the most commonly encountered causes of nausea and vomiting. Syndromes that have a high incidence of nausea and vomiting, such as migraine, headaches, are addressed in other chapters. The pathophysiology of nausea and vomiting is complicated by the involvement of numerous neurotransmitters and nerve systems arising from different organs and activated by a variety of stimuli. Because of this, it is often difficult to determine which stimulus is most responsible for a patient's symptoms and to design a therapeutic plan. Complications of prolonged or severe nausea and vomiting include esophageal rupture, Mallory Weiss tears, dehydration, hypokalemia, hypomagnesemia, hypo or hypernatremia, metabolic alkalosis, malnutrition, and dental caries. Motion sickness refers to the normal physiologic response to unusual perception of motion. It can be precipitated by abrupt changes in movement, such as during bumpy rides, turbulent flights, and rough seas, and is also referred to as air sickness, seasickness, or car sickness. The development of motion sickness depends on a number of factors, including the characteristics of the stimulus, frequency, intensity, direction, and duration, as well as individual susceptibilities, including age and gender. Women are more prone to developing motion sickness than men. Susceptibility to motion sickness is highest between the ages of 3 and 12 years and gradually decreases thereafter. Children under the age of 2 years are typically immune to motion sickness. Motion sickness begins with a feeling of stomach awareness, followed by nausea, increasing malaise, pallor, and sweating. As symptoms worsen, patients may also experience increased salivation, a feeling of body warmth, dizziness, and vomiting or retching. The severity of symptoms varies with the intensity of the stimulus and the susceptibility of the individual.
Some say seasons come and go, but I'm too young to know. And we must turn to Eskimos before I'm frozen in the cold, before we're buried in the snow. You're sucking child, there's something wrong, and I'm too old to know. You're suffering, but can't be helped. You're stubborn, bored, but crying out for something more to cry about. But I don't understand why it's such a pain to be. Oh, the man who's on the page spelled out in front of me. Oh,
out heaven's drums by fools, but I'm too full to hear. So I pray to God to let me home, and for salvation sell my soul. I'll pray to God to take me home. And some see seasons come and go, but I'm too young to know. And we must turn to Eskimos before I'm frozen in the cold, before we're buried in the snow, before we're frozen in the cold. But I don't understand why it's such a pain to be. Oh, the man is on the way, spelled out in front of me. Oh.
Good for Grapes playing Eskimos. Theories of the cause of motion sickness center around a mismatch between the motion one expects to occur, either through visual cues or previous experiences, and the actual motion sensed by the vestibular apparatus in the ear. The vertical component of the motion is believed to be most important in causing motion sickness, and the frequency of the movement must be relatively slow and prolonged to cause it. This may explain why ship travel, characterized by low-frequency continuous heaving, is such a potent cause of motion sickness, while traveling in a speedboat is not. Neurotransmitters thought to be the most responsible for motion sickness include histamine and acetylcholine. Drugs used for treatment are aimed at modulating receptors for these chemicals. Post-chemotherapy nausea and vomiting. Nausea and vomiting associated with chemotherapy are divided into three types: acute, delayed, and anticipatory. Whether acute or delayed nausea and vomiting is experienced depends most strongly on the actual chemotherapy drug administered and their dosage and infusion rate. Acute PCNV starts within a few hours after chemotherapy administration and usually does not persist beyond 24 hours. Occurs in more than 90% of patients receiving highly emetogenic chemotherapy regimens, for example, cisplatin, cyclophosphamide. Patient-related risk factors include younger age, female sex, patients with a past history of low alcohol intake, poor control of symptoms in prior cycles, and history of motion sickness or nausea in pregnancy. The neurotransmitter most responsible is serotonin, while type 2 dopamine and neurokinin 1 receptors also play a role. Chemotherapy and radiation therapy cause enterochromaffin cells lining the GI tract to release serotonin in large amounts, activating 5-HT3 receptors in the GI tract, which stimulate the vomiting center in the medulla oblongata. Delayed PCNV begins at least 24 hours after administration of chemotherapy and may last up to 6 or 7 days. Cisplatin and cyclophosphamide are the most commonly used drugs that cause acute as well as delayed nausea and vomiting, often with a nausea and vomiting free period in between. With cisplatin, the incidence of delayed nausea and or vomiting may be as high as 80%. Serotonin is less important in delayed nausea and vomiting, while substance P-dependent mechanisms appear to play a significant role. Anticipatory vomiting is a conditioned or learned response to previously poorly managed nausea and vomiting in chemotherapy patients. Occurs in approximately 25% of patients by the fourth course of chemotherapy. Occurs before, during, or immediately after chemotherapy administration, but before acute nausea and vomiting would be expected to occur. Nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. Also known as morning sickness, nausea and vomiting in pregnancy occurs in 70 to 80% of pregnancies. These symptoms are normal in pregnancy. While the underlying pathophysiology is not well understood, a combination of factors are likely involved, including genetic, endocrine, environmental, gastrointestinal, and psychosocial. Other theories suggest evolutionary adaptation, where NVP serves to protect mother and fetus from ingestion of foods that might potentially be dangerous. Meat, fish, poultry, and eggs, all of which carry the risk of infectious diseases, produce the most aversion in North America. Morning sickness is less common in societies that do not eat such foods. In some cases, women who have morning sickness have had better pregnancy outcomes, including a lower risk of miscarriages and preterm deliveries. Virtually all women who develop NVP have some symptoms by 9 weeks gestation, and more than half of women have symptoms by 6 weeks. For the vast majority of women, the symptoms subside by 16 weeks. However, approximately 10% of women have NVP that persists beyond 20 weeks gestation. Nausea and vomiting may occur at any time of day and be constant throughout the day. Hyperemesis gravidarum is a serious condition which occurs in 0.3 to 2% of pregnant women. It is characterized by intractable vomiting, beginning in the first trimester and possibly continuing throughout the pregnancy. Vomiting may lead to dehydration, electrolyte disturbances, nutritional deficiency, or weight loss. This condition can threaten the survival of the fetus and the mother and requires early identification and treatment. Such symptoms must also prompt investigation for specific diseases such as urinary tract infections, diabetic ketoacidosis, thyrotoxicosis, and hepatitis. Hyperemesis gravidarum is typically diagnosed when other possible causes of nausea and vomiting have been ruled out. Postoperative nausea and vomiting. Postoperative nausea and vomiting, defined as nausea and or vomiting occurring within 24 hours following surgery, occurs in up to 70 to 80% of patients at high risk. Nausea and or vomiting may be present in the recovery room immediately following surgery or may begin several hours later. The cause of PONV is thought to be multifactorial, with individual surgical and anesthetic risk factors. Four primary risk factors are well recognized: female sex, non-smokers, history of PONV motion sickness, and opioid use. In one study, the incidence of PONV in the presence of 1, 2, none, 3, and all four risk factors was 10, 20, 40, 60, and 80%. Longer duration of surgery as well as the type of surgery also influenced the incidence of PONV. Intra-abdominal surgery, ophthalmic surgery, particularly strabismus, gynecological surgery, and ear, nose, throat surgery are associated with higher rates of PONV. Furthermore, even if the absolute risk of PONV is low with a particular surgery, patient and physician may elect to aggressively prevent nausea and vomiting if the effects of PONV have a high likelihood of causing undesirable surgical complications, as seen in some cosmetic procedures with tight suture lines. In terms of anesthesia, nitrous oxide has been associated with an increased risk of PONV. And volatile anesthetics are strongly associated with nausea and vomiting in the early postoperative period within 0 to 2 hours. Besides the obvious unpleasantness of for the patient, PONV can sometimes result in overnight hospital stays when day case surgery was planned, interfere with the pain management efforts, lead to wound dehiscence if vomiting or retching occurs following abdominal procedures, or result in fluid and electrolyte imbalances. Almost all of the known mechanisms for nausea and vomiting, dopaminergic, serotonergic, cholinergic, histaminergic, cortical, may be active to varying degrees in patients who experience PONV.
Pick me up, let's take a ride. Don't care anywhere, just drive. Windows down, I feel alive. The engine's humming, makes me high. Tell me all your reasons why, or don't say anything, just drive. Sing along and cruise the dial. Me, I'm all for killing time. Hold on, don't say nothing's wrong. I don't wanna be lonely, don't wanna be blue. I said hold on, don't say nothing's wrong. I don't wanna be lonely, don't wanna be lonely with you. It's not the night to stay inside. Wide awake, I chase the light. Black and white across the sky, falling stars, they catch my eye. Run away with me tonight. Too hot to sleep, so I just try. Or in the light, these spinning wheels in time of mine, the road another crooked line. Just hold on, don't say nothing's wrong. I don't wanna be lonely.
don't care anywhere, just try.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
And we're back. Who was that? That was the John Friedman Band? No, Reed Jameson Band. Sorry. That was the Reed Jameson Band playing Drive. Medication-induced nausea and vomiting. Almost all medications are capable of producing nausea and, to a lesser degree, vomiting. Some of the most commonly used and or hematogenic non-chemotherapy drugs are listed in Table 2. You want to hear them? Antituberculosis agents, erythromycin, sulfonamides, tetracycline, carbamazepine, phenobarbital, phenytoin, valproic acid, ASA, oranofin, colchicine, NSAIDs, metformin, sulfonylureas, amiodarone, beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, digoxin, procainamide, acyclovir, levodopa, nicotine, opioids, oral contraceptives, theophylline. The mechanisms by which some drugs cause nausea and vomiting are unknown, but likely involve extensions of their pharmacologic action. Drugs that cause vomiting by acting on the area postrema include dopaminergic agonists, for example, levodopa, nicotine, digoxin, and opioid analgesics. Agents such as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, and erythromycin activate peripheral afferent pathways, most likely vagal, which then stimulate the brainstem nuclei to coordinate the act of vomiting. This chapter specifically addresses opioid analgesics. Opioid-induced nausea and vomiting. Approximately 25-30% of patients started on opioids experienced nausea. Nausea and vomiting are most common during the first few days of therapy, and tolerance develops rapidly thereafter. There is little evidence of differences between opioids in their propensity to cause nausea and vomiting. Rather, the increase in the dose of opioid raises the risk of nausea and vomiting. Opioids may cause nausea and vomiting by stimulating afferent input into the vomiting center via the vestibular apparatus, the cerebral cortex, or the chemoreceptor trigger zone. Well, that's it for this week, radio fans. I hope you guys are as tired and exhausted as I am out there listening in radio land. We got one more song for you. This is Neuromancer by Emma. Until next week, stay pharmaceutically sound.
Just keep going.
An ocean of sound and echoes abound. It's Saturday night, so chill, and don't go out until your ears have heard a neater, deeper reverb. Bringing you the newest tracks and old favorites of shoegaze, post-rock, trip-hop, dream-pop, and everything in between with a sick echo. Enter into a deeper reverb every Saturday night from 8 to 9 p.m. on CITR.